Johnson & Johnson baby powder is being pulled from shelves by three major U.S. retailers. J&J had recalled some bottles over possible asbestos contamination last week. Now Walmart, CVS, and Rite Aid are removing all 22-ounce bottles of the product. Johnson & Johnson faces more than 15,000 lawsuits over its products. Last week's recall was the company's first over asbestos, after U.S. regulators said they'd found traces of the carcinogen in one lot of Johnson's baby powder.
It's been months since U.S. investigators concluded that, yes, Russia did meddle in the 2016 election to help Donald Trump win the White House. But the Russia probe is in the spotlight once again. A source on Thursday told Reuters that it is now the focus of a criminal investigation.
I do.
It all started earlier this year when Attorney General William Barr launched a Justice Department review of the Russia probe's origins, looking into Trump's claims that law enforcement and intelligence officials had acted improperly.
As wildfires scorch Northern California, like in wine-producing Sonoma County, thousands of residents have been left in the dark Thursday. California's bankrupt power producer, PG&E, shut off electricity in over a dozen counties as a preventative measure against wildfires. That's because, as the company says, hot, dry wind can knock down power lines and start fires in the dry trees and vegetation. PG&E said additional power shutoffs are expected, with Southern California Edison looking at cutting power too.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's October the 25th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway here on the program today. We're going to focus in on your money, your portfolios. We have a regular guest with us today, Paul Nolte, up first this morning from Kingsview in Chicago. Paul is a portfolio manager there, and he knows all things about the economy, also about how our money is being spent. And we're going to bring in Paul a little bit later in the program, just in a few minutes or so, for a chat about what's been happening in the economy this week. There's been some data on how positive or negative things are moving in the economy. We're also going to bring in some charts that Paul has put together on what Americans are saving, what the financial picture of the average American looks like, and we'll see if you fit into that as well. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here. Brian is the senior aviation business editor at skiff.com, and we have some aviation news this morning. We'll update the 737 MAX grounding story. United Airlines is working on a new regional jet that has some bigger seats and more leg room. That's coming up at about 5:38 in our second segment this morning. So stay tuned. We've got a good show for you this morning. We'll begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures look like a flat opening on Wall Street today. Dow futures are up just 2 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just fractionally as well. As we look around the world, markets in Europe are all in the red. In London, off nearly 33 points, almost a half a percent. In Germany, off nearly a quarter of a percent. And in France, off just a fraction. In Asia, the market day ending in Tokyo with the Nikkei up nearly 50 points, about a quarter of a percent. In Hong Kong, lower by about 130, nearly a half a percent. In China, up by nearly a half a percent. And oil in the U.S. is trading at $56.13 a barrel, which is down about 10 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. The New York Stock Exchange is about to get its first publicly traded spaceflight company. California Virgin Galactic, California-based Virgin Galactic, reportedly filed documents to merge with a venture capital firm. And after the completion of the merger, the two companies are expected to trade under the ticker symbol SPSE as part of Virgin Galactic's commercial spaceflight plans. The company, along with Under Armour, unveiled prototype spacesuits designed to explore the moon and Mars earlier this month. The UAW members who've been striking at General Motors for 7 weeks will find out later today if they're headed back to work. They've been voting through the week on a proposed contract that appears poised for ratification. The proposed contract includes higher wages and an easier path for temporary workers to become permanent employees. If the contract is approved, some plants could reopen within a day or two. Nearly 50,000 workers have been striking, prompting the shutdown of dozens of facilities across North America. Here in Chicago, it's day 7 out of a classroom for Chicago Public School students. The strike by teachers continues, and Vic Vaughn will have more on that in our news segments this morning as we move forward in the 5 o'clock hour. And Ford is going to show off a new Mustang-inspired electric SUV next month. The automaker says the new vehicle busts the myth that electric vehicles have to be boring. The announcement comes as rival Tesla started production of a new, more affordable electric SUV. That is expected to roll off the lines in 2020. The new Ford SUV will be unveiled November 17th at the Los Angeles Auto Show. Now, front and center this morning, Paul Nolte is with us. Paul is an SVP at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He is happy and kind enough to come every Friday here to our program to talk to us about the economy and our portfolios. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning, Steve.
So what did you see this week that it was either a bright spot or a red flag for you in the economy?
A little bit of everything. You know, we had earnings. We're in the middle of the earnings season. This week and next week are the two biggest parts. Earnings generally uneven, so you couldn't say, okay, here's a sector that's doing great. Here's one that's doing poorly. You had really kind of disparate earnings. Even last night, Intel did really well. Amazon missed earnings. Twitter missed earnings as well. So that's kind of uneven, but generally better than expected. But there's that game that goes on Wall Street. We're going to lower expectations so we can beat those. If you take a look at the manufacturing sector, that continues to show slowing, not necessarily recessionary, but certainly slowing. A lot of the regional Fed reports were on the negative side. But spending still is strong, so the consumer is still in good shape. So when you take a look at a lot of the consumer-related metrics, we're looking at probably a pretty good holiday season, and that's something that we'll be looking at certainly in the next 2 months as we roll into the end of the year.
Yeah, on the calendar today we have consumer sentiment, so we'll get another feeling feeling gauge today.
It is, and when we take a look at a lot of those indicators, retail sales were disappointing last week. But when you take a look at, again, a lot of the sentiment and some of the stuff that the consumers are doing, we're actually looking at, a pretty good Christmas season.
You know, as you dive into those company earnings reports, there were quite, more than double the number as not companies reporting some sort of negative forward guidance. And I know you mentioned this some sort of a game sometimes that
yes.
they play. But it doesn't happen all of the time, and it was, I think there were one day there were 25 out of 30 that had reported negative guidance going forward.
Yeah, and it is some of the game that goes on. I'm not going to say that we're going to do great next quarter because then everybody anticipates I'm going to do great, and if I don't, then the stock price goes down. So I tamp down a lot of those expectations. But the fact of the matter is a lot of the companies are citing trade as a problem. And there's no resolution in sight. So they're not quite sure how to play that game right now. And they are being impacted by trade and slowing global growth. So when you look at a lot of the companies that make up the S&P 500, again, a lot of the industrials are kind of struggling here. And when we take a look at top line growth is 2-3%. Bottom line is about the same, maybe a little bit better. And certainly stock buybacks have boosted the earnings per share number, which is what everybody takes a look at. So there continues to be a little bit of gaming of the system, if you will, by buying back stock to make the earnings per share growth look a lot better than really it is in the underlying numbers.
I don't know if you, I sent this to you in an email yesterday, but I don't know if this sort of jives with some of the numbers you're seeing. In terms of the year so far, it's been a really good year if you've been investing in stocks. The S&P is up nearly 20%. And then you can look over at some of the commodities. Gold is up more than 16%. Oil up 17%. Treasuries up more than 9%. So if nothing happens between now and the end of the year, it's been a good year.
It's, you know, really when you take a look at how the year has gone, a lot of those returns showed up in the first half of the year. And the market has kind of trended sideways since then. And a lot of people are looking at it, and when you go through the numbers with clients, a lot of them are surprised. Holy cow, you know, that's pretty good. It's coming off of a very bad end of last year. And I think, too, a lot of it is colored by the political environment, you know, because everybody's looking at the news and all the stuff that's going on in Washington, and they're going, you know, things can't be all that great. And you look at the portfolio and you're like, well, gosh, things have done really pretty well. And it goes back to my original point of you have to look at the economy. You can't look at the political environment. The two are very separate and move kind of in different realms. So as far as your portfolio is concerned, look at the economy, not at Washington.
Back to the earnings part of the story, did you have any companies reported earnings that have caused you to remove them from a portfolio yet?
Not yet. We have had a couple that have disappointed a little bit. We had a couple that reported very good earnings numbers yesterday, so we should be looking pretty good today. When we take a look at a lot of the companies, we generally don't remove them on a quarter miss or something that you know, might be going on there. We take a look at the longer term picture. So for us, certainly it's dividend growth. So as long as they're continuing to raise dividends, as long as they're generating cash flow, free cash flow above what they need to continue to grow their company, those are longer term metrics that don't tend to move around enough in a quarter to say, huh, we should probably be doing something here. So it tends to be a slower moving portfolio from that perspective. We're not so enamored or focused on one particular earnings quarter.
Yeah, Paul sometimes puts together charts for radio, and we always appreciate
holding it
that.
Close to the microphone so everybody can see.
But the chart today is an important one, I think, because when we talk about your money, people and their budgets and spending. It's interesting to get a snapshot of what the averages are for the country, what people are doing with their money. And the highlight of this, it's a pie graph that you brought in this morning, shows that we're not really doing very well in terms of saving or budgeting, are we?
Well, you know, and again, when you the answer to all of those questions always is it depends. And it depends on where you are. When you're looking at averages across the United States, certainly by being an average, half are above that, half are going to be below it. But when you take a look at the average number of earnings for a family, you're looking at roughly $78,000. Some people are going to go, oh my gosh, I'd love to be making that. And others will be like, I couldn't survive on that. But again, as an average, 15% of that goes to taxes. So state, federal taxes. The biggest spend out of a person's budget is housing, apartment or house or whatever. So $20,000 of that $78,000 goes to housing. Savings comes in well down on the list, and it's less than 10% of take-home pay after taxes. And some of that includes 401k, but again, a lot less than 10% of what people are taking home after taxes. So when you take a look and say, well, how can I do better on this? A lot of it comes down to just recognizing where you are spending money. I had some visits with clients over the last few weeks, and some of them younger, just getting started, happy to have money, happy to be able to spend. But taking a look at where do those dollars go and where can you cut some expenditures, that's really more the key than it is anything else. And sometimes it goes back to the old way of doing things. Write down everything that you're spending so it becomes you're aware of what you're spending and how you're doing it. In some cases, paying cash, you know, saying I'm going to take an allowance for myself, pay cash. And if it's gone by Wednesday, then I'm done spending money on things for me, maybe going to Starbucks or going out for lunch or whatever. Those are some simple and small ways, at least, that you can save some dollars and then take those savings and put that away for yourself.
Yeah, it's when you put it down on paper, you see it in very stark reality of the situation you're in. The savings situation, one especially as we head into possibly a recession or an economic downturn that one needs to focus on.
It does. You know, you want to have some money sitting aside for a rainy day, car breaks, you know, we need a new refrigerator or something happens. You need to be able to draw some dollars. And that could be in a savings account, that could be in an investment account that you have set aside in a fund that kind of gives you a nice rate of return as far as income goes, maybe a bond fund or something along those lines that you can draw on easily. But again, you need to have that resource that you can draw on as things happen, because we all plan, and they don't always go according to plan.
All right, Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, we're going to continue the conversation. Certainly, email is the best, and that is pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and they can drop me a note there, and we'll get started.
All right, we appreciate you coming in today. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
And Paul Nolte from Kingsview in Chicago with us every Friday here on The Opening Bell.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's Friday here in The Opening Bell. Our focus now turns to the business of aviation and travel. And joining us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles is Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor at Skift.com. Brian, I want to begin this morning with 737 MAX, because it's been in the news this past week, and we've seen some impact, too, with Boeing on that. The aircraft, of course, grounded after two fatal crashes. What's the latest on this, and what is it? How is it impacting Boeing specifically?
Yeah, Steve, some interesting developments coming out in the past week. First, the good news, or at least what people in the industry think is the good news. Folks are pretty sure that this airplane is going to be approved to fly pretty soon and could be back in the air early next year. We've heard things like this before, but Boeing had its earnings call this week. Its executives were fairly confident that this was going to happen, at least in the United States. The U.S. airlines, for the most part, don't know exactly when they'll fly the airplane again. But maybe if we give ourselves some wiggle room, we can say first quarter of next year. So that's the good news. The less good news is, you know, there have been lots of people, and in some ways they've been conspiracy theorists or considered that way, who have thought all along that there was some giant cover-up by Boeing here, and they always knew more than they said. And I was wary about that. But I have to tell you, Steve, in the last couple of weeks, there's just been this drip, drip, drip of information that's come out that essentially says that much earlier than people thought, Boeing knew that there was a problem with this airplane. Maybe not a deadly problem, maybe not a huge problem, but they knew that this automated system perhaps did not work as it should. And our listeners may have seen some text messages that became public about a week ago between two test pilots. And of course, you know, when you text somebody who's a colleague or a friend, you never expect it to go public. But I have to tell you, Steve, these text messages, they were just not good. You know, the two of them were talking about the need to get this airplane approved as quickly as possible, even though they knew it didn't quite work right. So I think that regulators and members of Congress are really going to be looking into this over the next several weeks. And folks may have also noticed Boeing had a little bit of a shakeup in its top executive ranks earlier this week. It replaced the president and CEO of Boeing Commercial Airplanes. That's the group that is in charge of, you know, the MAX. And we might see more heads roll in the next weeks or months. It's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and Dennis Muilenburg, the CEO and chairman of the company, lost his title as board chairman in all of this. So you know something, that's something big that's happening behind the scenes.
That's right, Steve. Boeing had held off on doing that for a long time, but I think they realized, the board realized recently that it had no choice, and we're going to have to see if the CEO even can keep his job over the long term.
Yeah, and one of the interesting parts of this story, and I know you've been writing about it, is how the airlines and Boeing have been getting along through all of this, at least through what we've been seeing as the lens from the public eye looking in. They seem to be kind of coexisting, but I wonder if there's more going on behind the scenes, because these airlines now have been without this aircraft for a year.
There's certainly more going on behind the scenes, Steve. The thing is that airlines, United, American, Southwest, they all expect to recover compensation from Boeing. And I think that the executives at these U.S. airlines have made the calculation that if you're going to go after Boeing for hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, you don't want to embarrass Boeing in public. So U.S. airlines in public have been saying, all the right things. You know, there are trusted partners. But I think that when they're all in the room, they're saying, you know, this has been a horrible experience. We need lots and lots of compensation. Do better, Boeing. And usually what happens in this situation, although maybe not always, is airlines can get a really nice discount on a future aircraft. So I would imagine that that's what the U.S. airlines are going for. Interestingly, Steve, on Thursday of this week, American Airlines had its earnings call, and I think a reporter asked Doug Parker, American CEO, a very pointed question about what Parker thought about Boeing's current leadership. And all Parker said back was no comment. You don't hear that much on an earnings call. Usually they can say a sentence or two that means nothing. They don't actually say no comment. So that probably tells you how touchy this whole situation is.
Let's change the subject. United Airlines designing a regional jet that is sort of caters to big spenders and first class flyers in small cities.
Yes, and this is going to be a big deal in Chicago, Steve. I think next week, United is rolling out what it's called the CRJ-550. It is a regional airplane. It's a regional jet. And historically, nobody likes getting on a regional jet. They're cramped. There's nowhere to put your bags. It's just not a good experience. United Airlines is making a big deal of the fact that they are rethinking the regional jet. So this is an airplane, Steve, that usually has 70 seats on it. United has put only 50 seats on it, so there's going to be an extra large first class, more extra legroom seats than usual, and even the seats in the back of the airplane that are usually very cramped are going to have much more legroom. There's going to be space to put your bags. I think that there's going to be a self-service bar for first-class passengers. It's going to fly to some very interesting cities out of Chicago. I'm looking at the route map now. Green Bay, Syracuse, Allentown, Pennsylvania, Richmond, Virginia, Oklahoma City, St. Louis, and maybe 10 other cities. So, you know, if you're flying on a route of, say, 500 to 800 miles from Chicago later this year or next year, you might end up on one of these special planes. So it'll be very interesting. United is saying that it's doing it basically because a lot of the routes that go to those cities that I just named right now don't have a first class. So the United has been flying these 50-seat jets that don't have a first class, and they don't have extra legroom seats. And people want them. They're willing to pay for them. So that if you're in Green Bay and you need to go to London, right now you basically have two choices. You can fly American through Chicago. You can fly United through Chicago. American has been offering first class for a long time. That's a nice trip. You get to go from Green Bay to Chicago in first class, and you get to go from Chicago to London in business class. United hasn't had that option, but with this new airplane, that they will.
You know, as I look at some of the pictures, too, I'm reminded a little bit of Midwest Express. I don't know if you remember Midwest Express, where they had these nice leather chairs and there was plenty of room and it all felt like first class. That's what I get the feeling when I see these pictures.
Yeah, it's a nice airplane. Of course, Midwest Express was known for those hot baked cookies on board, right? I don't think United is going to have those. But it's an interesting situation. United says there's a lot of premium demand. I mean, it's possible that of a lot of our listeners, like most people, usually fly in coach. But I have to tell you, Steve, all these airlines are saying business class, first class, premium economy demand is just sky high right now. And United wants to service it.
Yeah. And so what do you think the tickets are going to cost on this? What's the average ticket price?
You know, Steve, ticket prices are a function of supply and demand. And it sounds funny to say this, but the ticket prices are probably going to be the same as they always have been. And they're certainly going to be the same as what American is charging. People know these airlines, they match each other all the time. American has a fare sale from Green Bay to Chicago. United is going to charge exactly the same price. It's just the way it works.
There's another story I want to get to before we leave you this morning, Brian. JetBlue Airways cutting back a little bit on its Latin American network. What's going on?
Yeah, JetBlue came out and said this week their network in the Caribbean and Mexico is under a bit of pressure. We know that JetBlue is not a very big airline in Chicago at all, but on the East Coast, it is. Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, New York, and Boston are their big cities on the East Coast. You know, everybody still wants to go to the Caribbean, as it just so happens. We've all been reading the news, and you know, some markets do better than others. So there have been some issues, I think, in Punta Cana recently in the Dominican Republic. So if you're an airline like JetBlue, you say, we have a little bit of a problem here. We have to figure out, if people aren't going to Punta Cana, where else in the Caribbean do they want to go in February? So that's one thing. They're just kind of moving airplanes around to chase the places that people want to go now. I think they'll be fine in the Caribbean long term. Their other issue was in Mexico City. JetBlue went into Mexico City a few years ago. That's a good market for like a full service airline like United or American. It's a good business city. It's a major global city. JetBlue is more of a leisure airline. They don't have a big brand in Mexico, so it's hard for them to sell tickets to people who live in Mexico. And it turned out Mexico City was a really, really bad market for them, even though it's a good market for other airlines. So early next year, JetBlue is pulling out of Mexico City entirely. I think that their bread and butter is just places like Cancun and you know, Puerto Rico vacation places. They seem to have just a little bit more trouble with global business cities. Of course, they're going to be expanding within the next couple of years to London and maybe Paris. So hopefully they can figure it out better in Europe than they did in Mexico.
All right, Brian. Good talk as always. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor at Skift.com, with us every Friday here on The Opening Bell for the business of aviation and travel.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. NASDAQ futures are performing better than Dow futures, up nearly 13 points this morning. Dow futures are up just 3 points. S&P futures are up just 3 points as well. In Europe, generally a negative day, with markets as low as 0.5% off in London this morning. And in Asia, the market day ending mixed as well. Hong Kong down nearly 130 points. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. In the market story yesterday, Chicago Board of Trade soybean futures mixed as the government confirmed fresh purchases by China, but sales are still below what traders were expecting. Yesterday, the Department of Agriculture reported sales of 264,000 tons of soybeans to China. Did very little to the market, however. The November soybean contract ended lower, down 0.75 cents a bushel. December corn ended 0.5 cents lower, and the December wheat contract ended down 3.75 cents for the day, as harvest weather looks pretty favorable for making progress. Meanwhile, lean hog futures fell for the sixth time in 7 sessions, pressured by weak cash hog prices and again disappointing export data that showed minimal new sales of U.S. pork to China. In February, lean hog contract down $1.67 a hundredweight. The October live cattle contract ended the day unchanged, and the October feeder cattle contract ended just 7 cents of a hundredweight higher. Interesting move by Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature yesterday. They're pursuing changes in state law to ban labeling food as meat, milk, or dairy if they don't contain those products. Has a way to go before it could become law in Wisconsin, but at least they are pursuing the possibility of getting that labeling law. And then across the lake, a divided Michigan Senate yesterday passed an update of the state's animal industry law, including a proposed delay of a requirement that chickens and pigs be given more room in their cages and stalls. That's Ag Biz for this morning. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories from the ticker before we leave you this morning. EU ambassadors have agreed on the principle of granting Britain's request for another extension to the Brexit deadline, but have yet to decide on the length of the new delay. EU ambassadors met today with the EU Brexit chair. Britain is scheduled to leave the European Union on October 31st, but has asked for a 3-month extension to that. It looks like Halloween's going to the dogs this year. 29 million people are expected to dress up their pets next week. That comes out to about $500 million spent on pet costumes. The number is double what it was in 2010. A list by the National Retail Federation shows pumpkin costumes are the most popular, followed by a hot dog outfit. As for total spending, including two-legged costumes, that comes out to about $9 billion. Facebook is introducing the News tab, a new section in its mobile app that will display news headlines selected by journalists. Publishers will be paid for their material. The social network has long been at odds with news publishers, who complain it benefits from sharing of their stories without paying for them. This is a potentially big step for a platform long characterized by its difficulties stamping out misinformation and its unwillingness to contract with publishers. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, October the 25th. Consumer sentiment figures are out today. We'll also get a look at the Treasury budget. On the earnings calendar, Illinois Tool Works, Charter Communications, the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, and Phillips 66, all reporting quarterly earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on Friday, October the 25th.